Hi, everybody. Just getting the phones ready here. Bear with me. I'm just saying.
Yeah, just mute yourself.
Can anybody hear me? Anil, can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you. Thank you. Loud and clear. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to try to mute everyone. I hear someone talking. Bear with me. Okay, we'll go ahead and get started. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to today's webinar. My name is Randy Scheid, and I'm the Chief Strategy Officer for Quantum Foundation. Before we begin, just a couple housekeeping items. All participants will be on mute. If you have a question, please raise your hand or use the chat box. The webinar will be recorded, and we will try to make it available at a later time. Before we dive in, I just wanted to give you a snapshot of our agenda. Briefly, we will do an introduction again of Quantum Foundation, a little bit of information about the team behind this initiative, and then we'll turn it over to Anna Basnik, the CEO of Empower. And then at the end, we will have open discussion Q&A, so please hold your questions until then. You can type your questions in the chat box before then, but we won't unmute anyone until the end when we have a little bit more time after the presentation. So briefly, just and those of you who were here last time with us have already seen some of this, but we're not going to go in the same level of detail. But I did just want to introduce the team behind the effort. Here at Quantum Foundation, you have myself, Randy Scheid. We also have C. John Armstead, our program officer. And the two individuals on the outside are Anil Irfan and Sherry Williams. Both are integral components of this initiative. Many of you may know either of them. Anil Irfan is the president and CEO of IMSD Innovations and a certified telehealth professional. His organization helps healthcare providers develop virtual health programs by conducting needs assessments, optimizing workflows, completing organizational readiness assessments, and assisting and selecting technology solutions. Sherry Williams is the COO of the Global Partnership for Telehealth. GPT is a nonprofit organization with an international footprint that is based in Waycross, Georgia. Their mission is to leverage cutting-edge healthcare technology in order to bring much-needed resources to rural and underserved communities. Both Anil and Sherry serve as the thought leaders and content experts on this project. And we are going to benefit from their partnership today when we introduce Anna. So as most of you know, or some of you may know, Quantum Foundation was founded in 1997. We are a private grant-making foundation, and we were formed from the sale of JFK Hospital in Atlantis, Florida, here in Palm Beach County. We're a wholly independent private foundation with our own governing board. We do not fundraise, but we serve to make grants in Palm Beach County to support organizations that are improving the health of the county. Our mission is to inspire and fund initiatives that improve the health of our communities. In thinking about this initiative, one of the key questions we asked ourselves was, given all the advancements in healthcare technology, how can we leverage these type of advancements to improve the health of individuals in Palm Beach County? And what we decided to do back in January of this year was to build a network of individuals and organizations with a common shared purpose, to leverage technological advancements in healthcare to improve the health of individuals in Palm Beach County. Our interpretation of these populations include uninsured, underinsured, could also include underserved communities or underserved populations. This is an opt-in network created for broad system-wide benefit. We anticipate a high degree of collaboration among participants, leading to improvements in the healthcare delivery system in Palm Beach County. So far, we have both large and small organizations and systems in this network that have come on board. So we thank you all again for joining us in this initiative. With that, I will start to introduce Anna Basnick. Before I do so, I just want to point out also that Quantum Foundation is a neutral party in this network. As we look to leverage advancements in technology to meet our mission, we don't endorse specific services or technology. But we all know that access to behavioral health care is a challenge statewide, and especially here in Palm Beach County, it is no different. Thus, today, we wanted to highlight Anna for her determination and will to create a new innovative solution with demonstrated success in increasing access to healthcare. And with that, we are very excited to introduce Anna Basnick. Before we introduce her and Empower, there'll be time for questions at the end. Ms. Basnick has over 30 years of experience leading, managing, and working within a wide range of social service and behavioral health programs for large, multi-program, nonprofit, and public sector entities delivering bottom-line results, efficient systems, and strong community relations. As the president and CEO of Empower, a Central Florida-based mental health, substance abuse, and child well-being organization, Ms. Basnick has expanded the agency's services statewide with the implementation of telehealth. Through this innovative service model, Empower is leading the way in Florida utilizing telehealth for psychiatric, mental health, and child well-being / welfare services, with more than 250,000 service sessions provided to date via this method. During her time with Empower, Ms. Basnick has ensured the financial stability of the agency during tumultuous economic times, led the agency through a merger to include substance abuse services, enhanced visibility and involvement in the Central Florida community and the state, improved quality assurance programs, and greatly expanded our funding sources and relationships. She has her BA in psychology, sociology, and religious studies from Eckerd College, and she also obtained a master's in organizational management from the University of Phoenix. Anna, we appreciate you taking the time to be here today, and I think all of us are going to learn a lot from your presentation. So with that, I will turn it over to you, and I will be clicking the slides for you since we're doing this remotely. I think Anna is actually calling in remotely as well. And you should be unmuted now, Anna, so you can jump in whenever you're ready.
All right, perfect. Much appreciated. And thank you to the
Quantum. Thank you for being here.
And Neil, much appreciated. Your partnership has been wonderful. So the question I often get asked is, can telemedicine transform the behavioral delivery model? And I hope by the end of this presentation, you'll answer that question yes, just like I have. You can go ahead, Randy. I keep wanting to click it myself.
Yep.
Just a little bit more about Empower. As Randy mentioned, we are a nonprofit, a mental health and child well-being organization. Our roots are here in Central Florida. Empower was founded in 1994, actually, as Intervention Services, and we rebranded since then. This past July, we merged with an entity called The Grove, which is based in Seminole County, not too far from where we were originally. And that is a whole substance abuse continuum of care, which really expands what we're able to do with telehealth and with residential programs and services. Our primary services, as was mentioned, are mental health therapy and assessment, psychiatric treatment, case management, adoption, substance abuse, and independent living in the child welfare arena. This county list needs to just go away. Every time I do this presentation, I think about things that have changed. But even though we were founded in Seminole County and basically did most of our service delivery in the Tri-County area, we now, because of telehealth, are statewide, and we're actually moving nationally and internationally as we speak. We're working on some of that, those projects. We serve about 9,000 individuals a year. All of our different areas. Right now, our primary funding streams are Medicaid, the Department of Children and Families, and commercial insurance. And we are looking to add on to that and do some private pay overseas as well. Okay, Randy. So this slide is really why we decided to do what we are doing right now. I'll draw your attention to the second bullet. It's shocking when you really think about it. National data shows that we need about 26 psychiatrists per 100,000 people to actually meet the need in the current mental health crisis. National average is 10 per 100,000 people. Florida has 7 per 100,000 people. And if you narrow that down to child psychiatrists, we have about 4. Couple that with the average age of a psychiatrist is over 55. You can see why there's a crisis in actually having individuals that can service those that need it. Our mental health needs that go unmet, 1 in 4 adults experience some sort of mental illness in a given year. 1 in 5 youth ages 13 through 18 have severe mental health disorders. 50% of all chronic mental illness begins at 14, and approximately 60% of adults and 50% of youth with mental illness receive no mental health services in the previous year. This slide and that last slide just shows you the kind of the powerful impact and a solution is needed. So I'm assuming everybody on here understands what telehealth is. I think as we've gone through this metamorphosis for us, it's been the last 6 years, it's really important to know that telehealth is a solution. It's not a service. And I think we do ourselves a disservice by saying it's people assume it's some sort of a service that's different from what you get in a traditional doctor's office. I always tell the story on the 20th of this month, if my dad were still alive, he'd be 106 years old. He and my grandfather got their medical services from a doctor who came to their house on a horse. We've evolved over the years to what we are typically used to doing is making an appointment at a doctor's office, going to the doctor, sitting there, waiting our turn, getting the services. Now the doctor's coming back to our home, but he or she is not coming on a horse. They're coming on a smart device. It's really just another way to receive the same services that you would receive typically face-to-face. Again, why telehealth? Why now? The lack of access to treatment. When we first started, we thought, well, it must be a rural geographic challenge. We're finding out that that's not the case, even in Orlando. as big as we are here, the transportation is insufficient or it takes too long. It's not when folks need to get there. The Affordable Care Act made an impact. And behavioral health is really well suited to utilize the telehealth component. It actually started in the military on the combat fields, and a lot of folks many years ago, 25, 30 years ago, were receiving medical services on the combat field. Telehealth was the way that they did that. Okay. So there's several types of telehealth. There's a hub and spoke model, which is how we started. Florida Medicaid is really way ahead of other insurance providers in the state. I never thought I would say that, but a hub and spoke model basically means my doctors, my practitioners, my therapist are here in one of our offices, and the client is in another predetermined spoke. It could be a school, it could be another doctor's office, it could be a church, it could be a homeless center, but we had to have a formal arrangement for that to happen. Direct-to-consumer is just what that sounds like. My doctor, my practitioner can be anywhere, and the client can be anywhere as long as it's a HIPAA-compliant platform. Those are the two that we use in Empower. There's others, Storm Forward, Asynchronous, and Remote Patient Monitoring, which really don't really lend themselves to the behavioral health world. But those are the different, you'll hear different folks talking about the types of telehealth that are out there. So all we need is a smartphone or a tablet, a PC or Mac with a camera, an internet connection, and some sort of a Google Chrome browser. What we have found, the majority up until of late, majority of our clients are either Medicaid clients or indigent clients, and a lot of folks have the worry, well, there's not internet, there's no connection, they don't have the phone or the smart device, and really we found that not to be true. And if that is true, we've been able to implement the hub and spoke model to make sure folks have access to those devices. But it's not complicated like it was 4 or 5 years ago when it started. And particularly in mental health, we don't need other equipment. We just need the practitioner and the client. There's not other medical equipment that is needed. Okay. So when Florida Medicaid decided that they were going to allow telehealth, and fast forward to today, Florida Medicaid has in all new contracts they've negotiated with the managed care plans, they are requiring the plans to offer telehealth for any service that they would offer face-to-face services for. That was not the case in the very beginning. We started this about 6 years ago when we were actually pilot projects with two of the health plans. And then when Medicaid decided, okay, we're going to do it with a hub and spoke model, we were like, all right, here we go. We're going to roll it all out. And then we realized that the Florida Board of Medicine put a ringer in it for us. We all know that pill mills have been and continue to be a problem in our state. The Florida Board of Medicine had just initiated a rule that said you could not prescribe controlled substances in an outpatient setting via telehealth. Which again was to address the pill mill issue. What they neglected to realize, because there are, at that time there were no psychiatrists on the board, is that many of the drugs that our practitioners prescribe for mental illness are controlled substances. They're non-narcotic, but they are controlled substances. We had a halt for a little bit. We did a waiver request to the Florida Board of Medicine, and we were granted that. We were the only entity for a year that was allowed to do that, and we were required to collect some outcome studies and go back. We went back the second year, we were granted that waiver again, and then they changed the rule for the entire state. I'll put a little caveat here now. There are two pieces of legislation before the legislature right now in the state of Florida, and the House version does not have this language in here. So we're working very hard to make sure that it does, and that it kind of aligns with the work that the ACA telehealth group did. So if anybody's interested in the legislation, there are two bills out there, one in the House and one in the Senate. Okay. So the outcomes that we reported back to the Board of Medicine after that first year of waiver, is that clients were more likely to seek treatment because it's more convenient. The clients were more likely to stay in treatment. They were less likely to cancel or no-show. And mind you, during this time, we were only doing the hub and spoke model. So this was data before it even became easier for clients to access services. Our new client evaluations were more timely, reduction in wait time, 6 weeks. We at one time had 3-month waiting list, and I know a lot of providers to this day still do, down to 2 days. 98% of our patients were satisfied, and the big one for me is that 10% fewer prescriptions were written to the telehealth group for the controlled substances versus the face-to-face, which I think is pretty telling. Okay. At the same time we conducted that first study for the Board of Medicine, we initiated another one with the University of North Florida, and basically I won't read all of these, but both of them found pretty much the same thing. The biggest component to note here is that there really was no difference for the clients for face-to-face versus the telehealth, which is a big deal for us. Okay. So we started our pilot at a group home called The Haven in Brevard County. And the reason why I really got into wanting to move our agency towards telehealth is we do a lot of child welfare work. And a lot of those youth are in group homes or in foster homes. And you're really bound by the doctors that are in your area and your ability to get into those doctors for mental health treatment. So we had the Haven in Brevard County, we actually had to drive those clients from Brevard County to Osceola County to see our practitioner. It's not a good thing to take kids out of school, to drive them a good hour, hour and a half away, have them wait in a doctor's office. Our doctors and practitioners were frustrated because the person who was transporting them didn't really have the good medical history, and they didn't feel like they were getting the information they needed, and then the kids would go back. You would have thought Brevard County was in the most remote part of the state, and it's not. So that's when the light bulb went on that we need to do something to have more doctors available to those that need it. We developed our own policies and procedures and best practices in conjunction with the American Telehealth Association. We did our informed consent. We got a HIPAA compliant platform. We're actually on our third platform right now, which I don't believe will be changing again. We trained our psychiatrists to use telehealth. We started in our psychiatric clinics, and we went live in March of 2013. Okay. And this is Allie. She was our very first telehealth client. Allie is in the pink shirt with her back towards us, and our doctor is on the screen. And the beauty of this, she's actually at the Haven in the group home. The staff were able to call her in from outside, playing whatever she was doing, came in. They were able to tell our doctor, you know, how her behavior's been, how she's, you know, been eating, sleeping, all of that. And then she was able to go right back out playing. She didn't miss anything. She didn't have to go anywhere. It was a perfect solution. To this day, we still service clients at the Haven. So our capacity and practitioners, this number changes every time. I know they read 250,000. It's probably close to that now. We are doing in excess of 700 a week. We just are bringing on 1,000 new clients in Jacksonville and expanding to Glades and Hendry County too. So that number will even go up higher. We have board certified and are board eligible child psychiatrists and addiction psychiatrists, psychiatric ARMPs, psychiatric physician assistants. We actually had the first one in the state. And then, of course, our traditional physician assistants, licensed staff, and master's level staff. We also, just on that piece, we realized through this that we had to change how we did business. And just like if you and I were to go to, you know, our doctor, I was out with allergies yesterday. If I go to my doctor, likely I'm not going to see the MD. I'm going to see a very qualified ARNP or PA. We modeled our programs just like that. We have psychiatrists that oversee teams of staff that includes psychiatric ARMPs and assistants. We're moving clinicians, social workers under that as we speak. We're kind of keep revamping it. But that has also been able to help us increase access and save, put that in quotes, save the psychiatrists for the more complex cases. Okay. Our top 10 diagnoses, I'm not going to read them to you. They're here. They're the same top 10 diagnoses as face-to-face. Nothing changed on that. The piece that probably we need to update this slide a little bit is now because of substance abuse and the Grove and some of that work we're doing, there's going to be some substance abuse pieces to this as well. So we do everything that we did when we were face-to-face: individual therapy, family group therapy, behavioral health assessments, psych evals, med management, substance abuse, OP, health advocacy, and we are getting ready to add medication assisted treatment to this. We're in the process of getting that all set up. Okay. The other piece that we had built into this is a collaborative care piece. We all hear how important it is to have health homes and for us in the behavioral health world to share with the internal medicine and pediatrics and vice versa. Also, because we do a lot of child welfare work, we felt it was very important to have the platform built to manage this for us. So we can actually have up to 10 users on or in a session at the same time. And as we started to think through this, we keep changing how we can use it, what we can use it for. So if I default to the child welfare world, if you have a child that's in foster care in one part of the county and the bio parents might be in, you know, a different county or in two different places, you have a guardian ad litem, you have a case manager, you might have the medical doctor wanting to be a part of the conversation. They can all be wherever they are and participate in the session. We've also used the same idea for staffings and staff meetings. We just actually added for the Grove, which is our residential substance abuse program for youth, we added a telemedicine component for our the medical care of our clients as well as the psychiatric. So he beams in and he can beam in with the psychiatrist or the clinicians on site as well. So that really opens up a whole new world, and it's a much easier way for practitioners and other involved parties to participate and communicate. And this is basically what I was just showing you and telling you. Obviously, the more people you have on the session, the smaller the screen gets, but there are so many different ways, and you could even use this for staff meetings or anything. It's sort of like a HIPAA-compliant Skype. I hate using the Skype word because people think we're not HIPAA-compliant, but it's a similar concept. Same with family therapy. We actually also finalized an adoption via our telehealth platform. The adoptive father was in the military and couldn't get back here, and the judge allowed us to beam him in, and the adoptive mother and the child were in the courtroom. So that was another exciting way to use this. So our specialty areas, DSM-5, mental health diagnosis, we are trauma focused. We do forensics, substance abuse, and developmental disabilities. And it's key with the developmental disability population. There are a lot of folks that it's very difficult to find somebody that will treat them because of their complex medical needs and or to get them to a doctor. So we've partnered with some agencies here in Central Florida where we can do the telehealth right in their living area, or if they're there for, you know, like a day treatment or something, we can get the treatment needed at that point. So it's been very beneficial for that population as well. So when and where? Most of our clients now are not seen in an office anywhere. They're usually home, work, anywhere they have privacy. We have a lot of folks that on their lunch hour will go out to their car and have their appointment there. Of course, we don't want them in the middle of Starbucks or someplace, you know, just to get the connectivity. But it has really made a huge difference in our clients with medication and our ability to connect with clients. The majority of our practitioners are not here in Central Florida. They are all over the state, and most of them work from home or their home office. We have a lot of folks that are retiring but still want to keep their foot in the door and provide services. So they're doing that, and we're doing all the back office things for them. We also learned hard lessons when we were doing this. It's really no brainer when I look back at it, but our clients aren't available Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. And particularly in the population that we traditionally have served within the Medicaid world or the indigent world, to miss work, often they don't get paid. They don't have sick leave. To, you know, have a youth miss school when they might already be behind or struggling is not a good thing. So we changed our office hours. Still open during those traditional times, but we have evening hours to, I believe, 7 or 8 o'clock at every night, depending on the situation. And it's also up to the practitioner. And we do have Saturday hours and some Sunday hours. We are also working on a 24/7 crisis, almost like a mobile response team, but it's a virtual response team that we can actually beam in and help prevent some Baker Acts or some having to go into higher levels of care. Okay. So a lot of this is a no-brainer, but one of the things that really makes a difference is if you are dealing, let's say, a woman who has been sexually abused and the only practitioner in your area happens to be a large male, for her to go behind a closed door and have a session might not be the best option for her. With telehealth, we can match. Because our practitioner selection is so much wider because we're statewide, we can match a client with a practitioner that best suits their needs. So we could, in that example, perhaps match them with a female practitioner. And there is what a lot of our practitioners are telling us is a safety, like a screen. The screen of the computer puts a safety net between folks sometimes. We actually have a waiting list for practitioners to work for us, which I don't know of any other behavioral health organization that has that, because they can set their own hours and work at their own time. our no-show rate when we had our offices, and I did not say this already, but a year ago, it'll be 2 years this September, we closed all of our offices. We are completely a virtual organization now for our psychiatric services and the majority of our therapy services. Our no-show rate went from about 60% when we had office hours to about 12% now. And we feel strongly it reduces the stigma. We made ourselves available when the clients need to be there, not when we just had office hours. We're matching them with the correct practitioners, and they're actually more compliant with their medication because they keep their appointments and they're not coming on or off. Another question I get often is, you know, what if you got a Baker Act somebody? We have a whole protocol in place. Everybody has to show ID. We have to know an address of where you are, and if there's anybody else in the home, a contact number, so that we know if the client is in crisis and does need to be Baker Acted, we know who to contact. I can tell you that the 6 years that we've been doing this, telehealth, we have not had one Baker Act, and when we had in-office visits, we had them often. And again, I think people are more relaxed in their own comfortable area, and when they can control that situation and having to leave where they are and be transported or go to a psychiatric office. Okay. For our child well-being, or many people call this child welfare, it's a very similar type of thing, and improves access to care. When a child comes into the child welfare system, they're re-traumatized so many times because they have to tell their story to so many people. Typically, prior to us using telehealth, when a client came in and they were at the Smith foster home, and then the Smith foster home, the client, you know, moved for whatever reason to somebody else's foster home across county, they had to get a different doctor or a different therapist because they didn't service that area. Or if the child is placed with a relative out of state, or, you know, far away, this goes away. We can follow the client wherever they go, wherever the child ends up being finding their forever home or being returned home, and they're not having to retell their story over and over again in this consistent treatment. We can do, I don't know how many folks on are in part of the child well-being system, but there's a lot of paperwork and other things that become much more easier when you're using this. We also know that in the child welfare system, kids quickly become behind in school once they're removed from their home. And this, again, allows them to not have to miss school or work. They can do after hours. Okay. Prescriptions. We are a completely electronic organization. We have an electronic health record. We do e-scribe. All of our consents, everything is completely electronic. We have no more paper. All of our prescriptions are done through Dr. First, and we have cooperating pharmacies. We actually have a pharmacy that we work with that delivers the medication to the client within 24 hours free of charge. Again, that depends on the area, but there are many parts of the state. All the authorizations, and we can help enroll them in the free and discounted medication programs. This also helps us to stop the doctor shopping. We've caught a lot of, because in that system, we can see where they've gone else. Their medical prescriptions that they're getting for treatment of diabetes or whatever. Our practitioners can see that to make sure that there's no interaction, and we can also see if they've been shopping for drugs and not taking their prescriptions. So that has also been a good benefit to this. Another question we often get is, how do we do biometrics? We like to say there's a Publix around the corner from just about everybody in the state of Florida. We have an agreement with Higi, which is the machine there. Clients can create their own account. I have a Higi account, so I can track my own blood pressure and BMI and all of that. We have an agreement with them. Once a consent is signed, that the client goes ahead of time and their biometrics are uploaded into our EHR for their next visit. We also take information from their practitioners or fire departments, but the Publix one has been a big one for us so that we can actually get that information ahead of time for clients. We also centralized all of our referrals and scheduling. It's an online process. You just go to our website. There's two big buttons, refer yourself, refer someone else, and everything, your consents, your appointments, everything is completely online as well. That would be our website. Anybody can submit a referral. We're open statewide, and this is the two buttons I was telling you about. Refer myself or my child, or refer another person. And MEND is the platform that we use. It is a HIPAA compliant platform. We do not record the sessions. There is an ability to do that, but we, for a variety of reasons, we do not do that. This is just an example of a screenshot. And then once the session is over, you have to have a code to get in the session. So anybody, the doctor would say, okay, I want Dr. Smith to join me, and I want the mom to join me who's at work, and then I want, you know, whoever's bringing the child. And they would send out that information, and as long as they got the code from the person starting the service, they could join. Again, just another example of what the MEND screens look like. MEND also does reminders for clients. We do them right away. You have an appointment set up, it's at 10, okay, you got 15 minutes, you got 20 minutes. So we can set it up for the reminding, however, just like you do for your own doctor, however often that we want it to be reminded. We also can, if the doctor is running late, another misnomer that folks have is because I'm doing it virtual, I'll never have to wait again. Well, that's not true. Doctors do still run over, but we have a virtual waiting room, and I have staff assigned to each client, all the doctors and clients. So if there's any technical issues or anything, that they can help them along the way. And if the doctor is running late, they will be told that in the virtual waiting room and given an estimated time of when the doctor will be available. This is where you enter in your code. It makes you compliant. Okay. Again, just tells them that their appointment has been scheduled and what to do. And again, we learned another hard lesson. The folks that used to sit at our clinics are now virtual. They all work from home too. But we do practice sessions with the individuals ahead of time to make sure that they have the app downloaded onto their phone or whatever they're using, and that if they have technical difficulties during that, we're there kind of side by side to help them. Again, these are just what I would call no-brainers now. It's just a very easy thing to do for our patients and our providers. It's accessible on any device. Most of our clients use smartphones. MEND, the platform, also provides 24/7, 365 day support. And again, it's more than just virtual visits. We can do secure messaging. They've automated a lot of our paper and paperwork, intake forms and consents. And they're also working on a lot of our therapists were like, well, I can't do play therapy. Well, they are designing systems within MEND so that there's a, you know, they can write notes back and forth, they can draw, they can do homework assignments, they can share documents back and forth that they're looking at. So basically whatever we've asked MEND to do, they've come up with a way to make it work. This number is wrong too. I got to update this slide, but here's where we are now. I mentioned we're doing the 24/7 access to services. That is really wrong. Ignore that second bullet because I've already told you that. We're partnering with law enforcement and community organizations, physician practices, hospitals, universities, and group care facilities. There's a big push for organizations to meet their HEDIS measures. We have a solution to do that. We've begun to integrate dental medicine into our residential program. We are up in Tallahassee influencing the legislation with a lot of Neil's up there with me all the time. We're working on pilot projects. We, again, added the substance abuse, and we're working on the MAP piece, and really just trying to make sure we change regulations for the positive with Medicaid and the legislation that's before us and recruiting practitioners statewide. And again, I just mentioned we're moving external to Florida, and we are also moving overseas to provide the same services. So that, I will open it up to questions.
Thank you so much, Anna. So if you have any questions, please type them into the chat box. and I will relay those directly to Anna. We do have one or two questions down there. Before we get into those, Anna, I did have a question. I wondered if you could give us, you sort of addressed it on the last slide there, but some of the, you know, just the contractual agreements that you have, sort of a maybe an example of some agencies that you're contracting with. Are they, you know, sounds like you've got a lot of systems that you're contracting with, but do you contract with any, say, small nonprofits that are maybe serving, you know, 500 people a year? And just sort of, you know, what those sizes look like, please.
Sure. The beauty of us is we're a nonprofit as well. And my board and I can make the decisions ourselves. We're here, we're what I want to say local, but meaning I don't have to go ask a bigger or arm of an organization elsewhere. So we're very nimble. We have large contracts with the managed care plans, you know, like the Medicaid plans. We work with all of those. Those contracts have been statewide. We just signed, and some of them could be contracts, some of them can be MOUs, whatever works for the agency. We just signed MOU with an organization in Jacksonville that does behavioral health, and they lost their psychiatrist. They had three and they lost them all at the same time. So we have just partnered with them. We just started taking on their psychiatric services. It's still their, you know, it's our psychiatric client, but we're still in conjunction with their therapist. We're still partnering with them. So we can make it fit whatever the needs are. We have a very small provider down South Florida that just needed psychiatric. They just refer to us and we get them on our schedule and do. We have a lot of contracts with child welfare lead agencies, and we'll work to prioritize if there's a critical need to get somebody in right away. We work to do that. We can usually see them in the same day or the next day. We don't really have a waiting list. We for sure can get you in within 2 weeks if you contact us. And we kind of grow practitioners as the need comes through.
What about any schools or charter schools or school districts?
That's a big question. So as you know, last year we had the unfortunate Stoneman.
Right. Yes.
Schools were asked to quickly pull together, all the different superintendents, the school districts were asked to pull together a plan on how they were going to increase access to mental health services. So they all did that. To my knowledge, there aren't any school systems in Florida yet that are doing telehealth. There might be some in the nursing area, but not so much in behavioral health. And I think the schools are in a flux right now. A lot of them are trying to pull the mental health services house, which is, you know, that's fine too, but there's still going to be a need for some psychiatric care. So we have done some with our counties here where we're physically located, or our administration offices, we've done some groundwork there, but it is slow going. It's very, very different for the schools. Even though we have clinicians that actually go into the schools, it's still a different concept. It's a culture change for them.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Okay. We have a specific question. Do you have psychiatrists trained in medically assisted treatment?
Yes, we do. Our medical director is trained and has a certification, and we have another ARNP. We're just getting our protocol together, and then we're already licensed for it. We just have to add it to the description, our program description, with the Department of Children and Families. So we will be doing that. We're just not quite there yet.
Okay, thank you. And then the next question, how do you work with other healthcare organizations such as FQHCs or other entities that may need behavioral health coverage? I think you've answered a little bit of the second part of that, but maybe FQHCs, how do you work with them?
We partner with some here in Central Florida. And it's interesting, each FQHC kind of looks at their guidelines a little bit different, but one of the ones here just refers their psychiatric clients to us, and we treat them. There have been some cases where we will outpost a spoke site there and have the clients there. But we're open. We've had several conversations. Some FQHCs feel like they have to, because I want to say it has something to do with sovereign immunity, that they actually have to have a separate, different kind of protocol, or that the doctor has to be physically in their location, and others don't look at it that way. So we just basically, obviously my doctors can't go there because we are all virtual, but we can have a spoke site there.
Right. Okay.
We do a lot of that with pediatric offices too. Pediatrician's offices, they'll set aside a room and we'll treat clients there.
I know the sovereign immunity question is a concern for some free clinics locally. I don't know if that's something you've seen addressed in other localities.
I'm sorry, you phased out a little bit.
I was just saying that I know the sovereign immunity question is a concern for some of the free clinics here in our county, and I didn't know if that's something that you saw folks addressing successfully in other areas.
Yeah, the only thing I'm aware of, because we have our own malpractice and liability insurance, because we're actually treating those staff and charging for it. But the only time I've heard it come up is with one of the FQHCs here, that the medical director felt like she had to get some clarification. And I think actually now that you're saying that, we did Shepherd's Hope as a big free clinic in our area, and they were having some questions with sovereign immunity, if their sovereign immunity revoked, I guess, if they referred a client over to us. So she was looking to, I feel like we're covered, so I'm not sure how she would lose her sovereign immunity. That was a piece that they were looking at.
Okay, great. So different vein for the next question, but or not literally, but figuratively. This person's got a number of clinicians that are concerned about vitals when considering treating patients in the home. They just wondered if you find that patients are compliant about going to Publix to get their vitals recorded, and are they reminded prior to an appointment to do so?
Yep, and they don't all go to Publix. So we leave it up. We treat a variety of different age groups and different clients with different needs. So it's up to our psychiatrist if they feel like the client is a good self-reporter and they're stable on their medication or something like that. Sometimes the doctors will take that. Our doctors will not see the client unless they are comfortable with the vitals that we have. So that in itself makes folks compliant, because because they have the appointment and our doctors just won't see them without that information. So a lot of them go to the fire departments. A lot of them, do go to their regular doctors periodically and have that information. So they are compliant, or we will not see them.
Good. Okay. Let's see, we've got one more question here. This is in regards to integrating medical and behavioral health care. Obviously, you've integrated the vital signs from Higi. Am I pronouncing that right, Higi?
Yeah.
Higi. What other ways, if any, might you be looking to integrate medical care into your solution?
Well, it's interesting. I was at the last telehealth, oh my Lord, the Southeastern region just put on a big telehealth program. And I heard a doctor stand up and ask the question about, and he said he was doing primary care telehealth, and I ran over to him. And so long story short, he is now working with us and for us, and we are integrating in the telehealth world, the behavioral health and the medical component. He is also our medical doctor at the Grove right now, which is we've actually purchased some equipment and have some of the other stuff, and he's doing all of our medical care, obviously, unless it's a serious thing that they need to go to the hospital, for the youth that are at the Grove that are there for substance abuse treatment. So we're planning on building a kind of a virtual health home like that to be able to provide both for others as well. I know I'm seeing Ken asking that question. Yes, Ken, we would look at using EMTs. We would look at, we're open to anything that works and that is different. What we've found is, this is really called disruptive innovation. There are a lot of folks that have been doing things the same way, a lot of the community mental health centers, for so long, and they look at things by a county line or by territory or by funder. And I'm just not looking at it that way. I'm looking at it, our clients are the center of who we are, and we've got to surround them and get them access to care, access to quality care, keep them out of higher level care. And that's why I look at what we're doing for our psychiatric and therapy. We only do outpatient. So if I can get them early on and prevent them getting getting them the treatment that they need to keep them out of higher level care, that's what I want to do. If they're coming out of a higher level care back in the community, I want to keep them in the community. So we'll work with, you know, an existing provider that's out there, and maybe they don't have a psychiatric appointment right away, but we need to keep this client stabilized. We can come in and do that and then hand it back off to you. If the client, say they're getting discharged from a Baker Act facility and they don't have a practitioner, we can pick up and be that practitioner. So I'm looking at this with no county lines, with no, you know, rules, and I don't mean being illegal, but not your this is the way we've always done it. We've got to how behavioral health care is delivered. We just have to do it every day.
Yeah, you almost just have to carve out your space and then let the regulations catch up, right? Because what you're doing makes sense.
Or we go change them, which we've been known to do as well.
Or you just change them.
Yeah. Meaning legally, yeah. I'm not going to go.
Yeah, of course, absolutely. But, well, you obviously have a powerful voice because there's been a lot of movement, so I applaud you.
A lot of gray hair too.
It looks like we're running out of questions here. I actually have kind of a self-serving question. I'm just curious if you're working with any groups here in Palm Beach County.
You know, I was thinking, I get all the different counties mixed up down there, but we are working with a few, in fact, we have staff going down south next week to meet with different folks. So we are
great.
Permeating. There's a large psychiatric need with, are you familiar with Camelot or any, I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah, the name sounds familiar.
There's another lead agency, it's not ChildNet, but we do a lot of work with ChildNet and the child welfare arena down there. So we're on our way.
Great, that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, some people may think that Palm Beach has everything, but we do have some pretty severe disparities in terms of health and access to health in the county. So I'm glad to hear you've got some inroads down here. It looks like just one last question here. They want to know if you're aware of any issues of accessibility for folks who are blind and use screen readers. It's a good question.
Yeah, I'm not. I know we've had the question. We had to get our platform up to HIPAA compliant. There was the lawsuit going around for the deaf and hearing impaired, or deaf and hearing impaired, and seeing. I don't want to speak out of hand. I believe that our solution mend, our partner, has figured out something, but I don't know that for a fact. So if something like that came up, we would do our best to try to make it work.
Yeah.
Again, some things may not work, but the beauty of the telehealth is, you know, it's with the psychiatric treatment. I mean, I still think it would work.
Right. Right. Okay, probably one last question here. Just in terms of your experience, what has your experience been like getting reimbursed via the new Medicaid managed care plans?
So I, like I said, I've been in this field for 30 years, and I never thought I'd say that Medicaid is farther ahead than any other entity, including private insurance in the state, for doing telehealth. It's hit or miss by the plans. Early on, we had to negotiate telehealth into our plans. It wasn't a given. So we were able to do that. Now with the new set of plans that are rolling out, they just did a new bid and new release. It's required. But actually getting paid is a separate issue. You're supposed to get paid, but sometimes getting them to pay you is another story. For the most part, the big plans have been incredible to work with. We've partnered with many of them, the WellCares, the Sunshines, the Magellans, and Beacons. We have very good relationships with them, and it's been a blessing. We wouldn't be where we are today if Medicaid didn't cover telehealth.
What about populations that are not, maybe they're not diagnosed, say they're, young teen, perhaps early signs of depression, but no diagnosis of depression. Are you able to work with folks like that?
Sure. Depending on the situation, we could, I'm not a clinician, so I won't go down that road, but if it's where they just need an assessment through our therapy world, then we would do that. If it's something that we feel might be a little bit more severe, we could do a psychiatric evaluation, but yeah, we don't. Just because you're referred, that doesn't mean, you know, you're automatically going to be diagnosed with something. But we just had in Lake Mary High School yesterday here, a young lady, 17 years old, commit suicide on campus. So we've got to we've got to pay attention to those signs and get help.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's an issue. Suicide is an issue, especially when you, it's an issue down here that we're facing as well. So I think, you know, we've got about 5 minutes here, Anna. I know folks, you know, they say one of the most valuable things you can give someone is time. So maybe we'll just kind of wrap it up here if you don't have any more comments, and we'll close this down a few minutes early.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity, and the Quantum Foundation, and Neil, you've both been, Andy, both great, all of you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And thank you again for your time. We really appreciate this. This is such a valuable solution that's really going to change lives. So we appreciate you making the time to present to us today.
Anything to
us. Well, thank you very much, Anna. And I'll just close by pointing out our contact information on there. If you have any questions or would like more follow-up, you're welcome to, you could certainly reach out to Anna directly through her website. I did want to give my email address, which some of you may have, as well as Anil or Fon's email address. You could contact us directly as well. So with that, we appreciate your time and hope that you have a great day. Goodbye.